Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney wrapped up a three-nation trip to England, Israel, and Poland. Did he manage three strikes in international diplomacy? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The headlines may have been embarrassing for Mitt Romney, but will the fallout of his foreign tour of foibles have any real consequences for his presidential campaign? We'll talk about national security and international diplomacy this hour with our political analysts, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University and Lindsay Cohn of the University of Northern Iowa. We'll also ask them to contrast how Romney's approach to foreign policy might be different from Obama's. Join our discussion after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today, Wednesday Politics Day, Lindsay Cohn is joining us. She's an assistant professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa, and welcome to you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Ben.
Great to have you with us after several months of an absence. Also with us from Iowa State University, political science professor Jim McCormick. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
And with the two of you here, we should be able to do some great analysis of what's going on internationally and how that is affecting us here in the United States, and in particular, the race for the White House for next year, for the election this year. Of course, the president taking office in January of 2013. Join our discussion. How would you like U.S. foreign policy to change in the next administration? What hot spots in the world are you most worried about? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're on Facebook and on Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, let's talk about Governor Romney's trip abroad. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney spent the past week traveling overseas and meeting with foreign leaders in Britain, Israel, and Poland. The trip did not go as well as planned. I don't think anyone is disputing that. It began in London the day after Governor Romney gave an interview to NBC News and was asked whether London was ready to host the Olympic Games.
You know, it's hard to know just how well it will turn out. There are a few things that were disconcerting. The stories about the private security firm not having enough people, the supposed strike of the immigration and customs officials, that obviously is not something which is encouraging. Because in the Games, there are three parts that make Games successful. Number one, of course, are the athletes. That's what overwhelmingly the Games are about. Number two are the volunteers, and they'll have great volunteers here. But number three are the people of the country. Do they come together and celebrate the Olympic moment? And that's something which we only find out once the Games actually begin.
Now, that statement in which he questioned whether London was prepared generated headlines, and this response from Prime Minister David Cameron.
Well, look, we are holding an Olympic Games in one of the busiest, most active, bustling cities anywhere in the world. I mean, of course, it's easier if you hold an Olympic Games in the middle of nowhere.
The middle of nowhere, apparently, Salt Lake City, Utah, where Governor Romney organized the Winter Olympics in 2002. Let's turn to you first, Lindsay Cohn. What did you make of this misstep in particular on his stop in Britain?
Well, you know, Romney himself acknowledged that the whole point of this trip was really to make himself look like a statesman, to listen and learn, I think was one of the things he said. I believe that his remarks were really aimed more at an American audience. They were aimed at reassuring people that he understood what was going on, at playing to something, the only thing that he really has in terms of international experience. And it was ill-advised. He should have basically said, hey, you know, it's going to be great. You know, that's what he should have said. But mm-hmm. I don't think that this will have any kind of negative impact on his approval ratings in this country. Of course, it makes him less attractive to people overseas, but I don't think it'll have an effect on his popularity here.
Now, Lindsay, Mitt Romney faulted the press corps for focusing on the negative moments of this trip, but what do you think of that comment?
Well, I mean, what does he expect the press to focus on?
Jim McCormick, in Britain, Mitt Romney, what was he trying to do?
Well, what, I think what, he was what trying should... to, you know, firm up the sort of the special relationship that the United States has continuously with Great Britain over the years. And, you know, it clearly was a misstep, the one statement about it was disconcerting. The others were fairly laudatory. The last statement about whether the people of the country are ready, you know, obviously that's something that he should have sort of thought through and perhaps said that the British people have had a long tradition of, you know, being on the world scene, and they will do a terrific job. And that was clearly something that, you know, his advisors or he himself had not anticipated or thought through. But I think what he's really trying to do, going to Britain first, was to firm up that special relationship that has been ongoing. And then my personal view is the other two stops were clearly for domestic politics. I mean, he in terms of getting Jewish supporters in Israel, Jewish voters in America from his trip to Israel, and ethnic voters by going to Poland. I mean, and, you know, if you look at sort of the electoral map, winning some more Jewish voters already, there's been, by the Gallup poll, President Obama has had an erosion of some of his Jewish supporters. And if he can cut into that, and particularly in a state like Florida, that would be all to Romney's advantage. And, of course, the ethnic vote in the center of the country, whether it's Ohio or Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, the Polish voters, but even more generally the ethnic voters from Central Europe would help the Romney campaign. So I think it was a little bit, you know, I mean, the focus has been on some of these gaffes, but it really, I think what should have been much more emphasized is how much this was a domestic politics trip, even though it was in foreign countries.
Let's listen to the comment that raised eyebrows in Israel from Britain. Governor Romney went on to Israel, as you mentioned, Jim. Here's the eyebrow-raising comment he made there.
It's a deeply moving experience to be in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel.
Lindsay Cohen, why is calling Jerusalem the capital of Israel a big deal?
Well, because it's disputed. And the Palestinian side would like at least East Jerusalem to be the capital of a Palestinian state. The Israeli side wants all of Jerusalem to be the capital of an Israeli state. And this has been for quite some time one of the biggest stumbling blocks to all of the peace talks that have happened. Obviously, there have been other problems as well. But that is an extremely it's an inflammatory statement to anyone on the Palestinian side. It's inflammatory to anyone in the international community who has been working hard at a compromise solution. It, of course, plays very well to the audience to whom he was trying to play.
So you agree with Jim, this is trying to shore up, trying to gain support for the Jewish vote here in the United States.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What does this say, these incidents, this trip, say, if anything, about Mitt Romney as an international statesman? Is it true that once you step on the international stage, you perhaps have to know other nuances, other possible landmines to avoid, and that just simply takes some getting used to? Jim?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that this does not bode well in terms of, you know, for a first foray into the international arena for Romney. I mean, there were clearly missteps at every stage, and it sounds like from some of the press reports that even some of his advisors were not, you know, not well prepared to handle this international audience, particularly in light of the comments in Poland by one of his advisors. So I don't think it bodes well, but. But, you know, there is a bit of a twist on this that you can turn if the Romney campaign wants to. And that is, you know, one of the things that the Republicans have certainly attacked Obama for is trying to Europeanize American politics. And, you know, maybe, you know, and Romney had a very steep hill to climb anyways, given Obama's popularity in Europe. No matter what he was going to do, he was probably going to meet with a fair bit of criticism. But, you know, Romney and his people probably can turn this around and say, you know, I mean, he was going to talk, sort of put American exceptionalism on the line and talk about American primacy. And that's what he proceeded to do when he was in Europe. So maybe it redoubts a little bit to support back home. But I think clearly the view really must be that, you know, this this could have been a much smoother kind of entrance into the international arena.
Mm-hmm. President Obama, then candidate Obama, 4 years ago, a very successful trip in Europe. We remember that
Berlin, right? I mean,
yes, two million as an audience in Berlin, amazing for a candidate. Lindsey Cohn, why is he still remains popular? Why was in 2008, and why does he remain popular in Europe?
He remains popular in Europe largely because he says the kinds of things that Europeans like to hear, and that was the reason he was popular in the first place. The same thing with President Bill Clinton. He was very popular all over Europe, still remains a beloved figure in Europe. And both of these men have said things like they want to engage allies, they want to cooperate. This is the way that the vast majority of Europeans sees as the appropriate way to deal with the rest of the world. Of course, it's not a terribly American way of looking at the world, which is, as Jim pointed out, you know, Mitt Romney believes very strongly in a sort of American primacy stance, a preponderance, you know, we will lead by making sure that all of you stay behind us. Obama remains popular in Europe despite the fact that he has not followed through on some of the things that many Europeans wanted him to do, the same way that many progressives in the U.S. Have been disappointed with him, but he still is saying a lot of the right things.
Also is different than the alternative. I mean,
yes.
I mean, there was such an anti-Bush sentiment within the European arena, and of course the portrayal is that Romney will be, but will resurrect some of the Bush kind of approach to the world, namely unilateralism and this kind of primacy discussion.
River to River listeners, you can join in our discussion. What do you think of Mitt Romney's trip abroad and the statements he made? How much does foreign policy figure into who you will vote for in November? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Now, Lindsey, you already said it wouldn't have much of a repercussion in this election campaign. Jim, weigh in on that point. Will this all be forgotten in a matter of weeks and really not be on voters' minds, or will it?
I don't think it'll be very high on voters' minds. I was interested to note that the New York Times just this morning it released some poll that they did with Quinnipiac. I hope
Quinnipiac.
Pronounce that correctly. For three battleground states, Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, I went and looked at some of the questionnaire results. It was interesting to note that national security across those three states was, as being the most important issue on voters' minds, registered at 3% and 4% across those three states. I think that's probably a good barometer of how significant some of the national security issues, and you can imagine they had a whole series of issues in the economy and jobs, obviously dominated the calculus of most voters. So I think, you know, national security issues are going to be nominal. I mean, when I've talked about this to my students, and there's been some research done on this, generally in an election, about 10% of the public say foreign policy is of consequence in terms of their voting calculation. You know, that's mostly domestic issues, and the economy obviously drives lots of voters' decisions. There are some exceptional elections and so on. I mean, 2004 was one of them, and 1972 might be another one in terms of Vietnam and so on. But most of the time, foreign policy is not going to be dominant. So that, on the one hand, that suggests that national security issues and foreign policy is not very important. The other side of it, of course, is that we have a lot of states that are going to be very close in the Electoral College balloting, you know, in terms of the votes within those states. So even though it might be 3 or 4%, it can make a difference in terms of the outcome here. And so that's sort of, to keep my job, I keep talking about how important that 3 or 4% or even up to 10% is, because it can turn a state on these foreign policy, by these foreign policy issues.
River to River listeners, how important is foreign policy, the policy taken by the presidents toward the rest of the world? How important is that to you, and why? 1-866-780-9100. Well, the latest polls, this one including one from USA Today and Gallup, show the majority of Americans, 52% say Obama can better handle foreign policy concerns. That compared with 40% who believe Mitt Romney can better handle foreign policy. Let's not forget that President Obama got to deliver the news that many Americans have been waiting years to hear, that the U.S. had killed al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. And in that speech, the president credited security analysts and military personnel and spoke directly to the families who lost loved ones on 9/11.
Finally, let me say to the families who lost loved ones on 9/11 that we have never forgotten your loss, nor wavered in our commitment to see that we do whatever it takes to prevent another attack on our shores. And tonight, let us think back to the sense of unity that prevailed on 9/11. I know that it has at times frayed, yet today's achievement is a testament to the greatness of our country and the determination of the American people. The cause of securing our country is not complete, but tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. That is the story of our history. Whether it's the pursuit of prosperity for our people or the struggle for equality for all our citizens, our commitment to stand up for our values abroad, and our sacrifices to make the world a safer place. Let us remember that we can do these things not just because of wealth or power, but because of who we are. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
President Obama, in that momentous speech announcing the death of Osama bin Laden. And I wonder, Lindsey Cohn, how much of an advantage on national security and foreign policy that the president seems to be enjoying, these poll numbers, for instance, showing that due to this one national security success?
Probably significantly due to that success. I mean, he's had a number of sort of foreign policy successes, at least from the perspective of his constituents, right? Withdrawal of troops from Iraq, the killing of Osama bin Laden, and a number of other sort of individual wins for him. He's, you know, his constituents have criticized him for not putting enough pressure on Israel, for example, for not being tough enough on certain human rights issues. But in general, he has done a fairly pragmatic and fairly successful job at foreign policy. And of course, his Secretary of State, very popular, and she's been very effective. So I think that he's probably going to hang on to that advantage in terms of foreign policy all the way through.
Okay, let's go to our callers in the 5 minutes or so we have before we take our break. Marty is in Garner. Hi, Marty. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the foreign policy issue and first off say that you can't separate foreign policy and our military. They are now intertwined. And as such, the only option we have to, quote-unquote, secure American interests is to totally dominate the world, which will bankrupt us as a nation, or pull back and make the rest of the world have to become involved in policing the world and taking care of their own problems. And that's my comment.
Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on that, Marty? Okay, we lost Marty there. Okay, good. Let's go to Bill in Waterloo. Hi, Bill.
Hi. You know, as listening to you folks talk about all this, it's disappointing that it appears to me it's all about form and not substance. You know, Romney cautioned about the participation of the importance of the athletes to the Olympic Games, and we've just had 8 badminton players sent home for cheating. He talked about the importance of the public supporting it, and they're hiring military people to go and fill the empty stands, and people can't get to see the Olympic flame because it's cordoned off. And he was right about how those things are important. And then he talked about how Israel has prospered through the freedom and innovation they have compared to what they have in Palestine. And that was true. It seems to me that he's getting knocked down for not making politically correct, pleasant comments about things where he's going, but no credit for telling the truth about what is going on as he sees it overseas. You have substantial problems or accusations that Obama is not always truthful about his Romney's tenure at Bain and so forth. But when Romney is truthful, he gets knocked because it isn't popular.
Okay.
That's my view.
Bill, thank you very much for that view, calling from Waterloo. Well, what about that, Bill, charging that we're paying too much attention to form, to these gaffes, and not the substance, Lindsay Cohen?
Well, we are talking, I mean, in a sense, your caller is right. What Mitt Romney said about problems with the security for the Olympics was true. The British themselves had been running headlines for it for quite some time. The difficulty is that when you are dealing with international issues, you must pay attention to form. It is simply not sufficient to go around saying exactly what you think and exactly what you mean, because this is a negotiation game. And sometimes saying things that are, as your caller put it, politically correct is the only bargaining chip that you have. As far as, you know, the truthfulness of the comments in Israel, I think many people would point out that that was misleading, in the sense that, of course, Israel has prospered. Of course, the Israeli people have done a phenomenal job of you know, surviving and flourishing. But it's not necessarily the case that the Palestinian people are an inferior people. They've had to contend with certain problems, you know, that make their flourishing somewhat more difficult.
Jim McCormick, how do you see that?
Well, I think Lindsay is pretty much on mark here. I mean, substantively, you could make the case that, you know, the situation in Britain was difficult, and it was really even recognized. But I do think you have to be careful about parsing the words that you use, and so that you have some opportunities, as Lindsay correctly pointed out, you know, in terms of negotiations and bargaining and so on. And it's just also probably going to somebody else's house. You probably want to be as courteous as possible. Now, again, if this was all calculated, and I really don't think it was, I mean, maybe it was directed, as I said earlier, at a American audience to demonstrate, you know, sort of that there was going to be a difference in emphasis by Romney if he were to be elected than by Obama. I mean, part of the Romney people saying that, you know, part of this trip was to show that the Obama administration had not been very successful in carrying out foreign policy, much as they would claim they hadn't been successful in carrying out domestic policy. Mm-hmm. I don't know the correct answer to that, but I mean, that might be part of the argument here. But I do think form is important, even as we could talk about whether substantively this is a correct statement or not.
And of course, some of it is just owing to the nature of the media now, isn't it? You can, as a Democrat or a Republican in office, you can say 99 things correct, but of course that one thing that is out of balance or different is what the focus of the media will be. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to talk further with Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, political science professor, and Lindsay Cohen, University of Northern Iowa, assistant professor of political science, as we focus on foreign policy, international relations, national security. We want to get your view, your questions on this. What are your hot spots in the world that you're most concerned about, that you'd like the president in 2013 to pay attention to? 1-866-780-9100. Also, when we come back, your thoughts on how Hillary Clinton has done as Secretary of State. Has she been effective? Is that why President Obama has higher ratings on foreign policy? We'd like to have your opinion, your questions. 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back with more of River to River after this short break. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, in the first half hour, Governor Branstad is due to join us. So why don't you jot down a question or two for our governor, and perhaps we can pose that to him tomorrow on this program. Today, politics as well. It's our weekly politics program on Wednesday. And today we're joined by Jim McCormick of Iowa State University and Lindsay Cohen of the University of Northern Iowa, talking mainly about foreign policy, national security, international diplomacy. We'd like to hear from you. What are the hot spots in the world you're most concerned about? Perhaps there was something on the foreign policy front that hasn't happened during the Obama administration that you would like to see addressed? 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Of course, also talking about Mitt Romney's venture abroad to Britain, to Poland, to Israel. Your thoughts on that as well, your questions, 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, let's discuss the type of foreign policy we have or might have under a President Mitt Romney. In an interview this week with Carl Cameron of Fox News, Romney outlined what is being called the Romney Doctrine, or his approach to foreign policy.
You know, I describe my views on foreign policy as having confidence in our cause, having clarity in our purpose, and having resolve in the application of might if that were ever necessary. So confidence, clarity, and resolve. And so that means that we should be confident enough to recognize that our principles and values are right, that we express them clearly to the world and to our people at home, and that we have a very high hurdle when it comes to applying military might, but that if we decide that we have reached a point where our national security interest is significant and is being threatened, that we act with resolve, not with a tepid or timid response, but instead with full resolve to assure that our mission can be successful.
Mitt Romney describing what is being called the Romney Doctrine. Jim McCormick, what do you hear in these words, and how does it contrast with what we have currently under President Obama?
Well, I think what Governor Romney is talking about is in terms of trying to restore American primacy. I mean, he's outlined his views in at least a couple different places previously, using these same kind of terms to describe his policy. But he also wants to create a second American century. You know, if the 20th century was the American century, he also talks about having the 21st century as the American century. And that means that you know, the United States would really, you know, lead the global order once again. And he, of course, sees what the Obama administration has not done in terms of putting the United States in this kind of preponderant or dominant kind of position. You know, the official sort of statement of the Obama administration is to create a so-called multi-partner world in which the United States would obviously play an important role, but not necessarily lead on all the issues, and that the problems that have to be solved are of a collective action kind of problem that really requires the cooperation of other states. And so there would be, I think, a clear distinction in terms of at least the rhetoric of a Romney administration versus an Obama administration. I'm not so convinced, frankly, in terms of substance of policy. You know, we hear this all the time, you know, that they're going to take it this different direction. There is a real sobering effect of once you get into office and the realities of what's possible and what's not. I mean, that was the case, in my judgment, from Bush to Obama, and I would see if Romney were successful in terms of a Romney administration, there would be a different rhetoric, and there would be some nuanced change in policy, but not sort of a step-level change in direction.
Lindsey Cohn, did you observe this, the president, then-candidate Obama's rhetoric compared to what happened when he got into office? Would you say he went through a sobering effect?
Well, of course. Jim is very right about that, and most presidents go through this. I agree with Jim on a lot of what he said, but I do think there are a couple of places where a Romney administration would be significantly different from an Obama administration. The two that come to mind most obviously are Iran and Israel. If you look at Mitt Romney's foreign policy advisory team, it is composed almost entirely of what we would call neocons, so people who are very very activist in terms of implementing democracy transformation around the world, people who were very much in favor of the idea of invading Iraq in order to not only preventively eliminate a potential future threat, but also to transform it into a democracy. Many of these people have expressed very aggressive stances towards Iran. So that, I think, might be a difference. Now, of course, we saw Secretary Panetta say just today, you know, the Obama administration is willing to use force against Iran, but it clearly has not been their first choice. I think you might see a little difference in that with a Romney administration. As far as Israel goes, the Obama administration has been trying to pressure Israel to make concessions. It sounds to me like a Romney administration would pull back on that entirely. Those are the two that I think you would see the most difference. But other than that, Jim is right. Presidents have a reality check when they get into office and realize that, as one of your callers pointed out, I mean, trying to control the entire world is an expensive undertaking.
And of course, it's clear that whenever an incumbent president is matched against a challenger, he has distinct advantages when it comes to knowing what's going on in the world, what is likely to happen, doesn't he? It's an unfair match. He's briefed by the National Security Council, by ambassadors, heads of state. So there is an unfair matchup in that sense. Mark is with us in Des Moines. I think you wanted to talk a little bit about Iran and Israel, didn't you, Mark?
Oh, yes. Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I'm very concerned about a couple of statements that candidate Romney has made. One is he seems to have an unconditional and unilateral support of any action, military action, that Israel would take. And that would be part of his policy under his administration. And also the fact that in earlier interviews, he mentioned that he believed that the number one geopolitical foe of the United States was Russia. And I have a great deal of concern about that. I have one additional comment about Secretary Clinton's upcoming trip to Africa. When she visits Uganda, I would very much like to see her press them on the issue of human rights, especially the fact that they have a death to homosexual law either on the books or on the ballot. I'm not sure which. And thank you very much, and I'm going to hang up and listen to the comments.
Thank you, Mark, in Des Moines. We want to talk in just a few minutes more about Hillary Clinton, but any reaction to Mark's comments from Des Moines from either of you?
Well, I think, you know, the question of Israel and what Romney will do, I do think that there's probably going to be, you know, less leaning on Israel in a Romney administration. But Israel has already been pretty intransigent. Netanyahu is not going to has not yielded to Obama, there probably would not be a great difference with regard to Romney in the White House here. The question of Russia is a little more open-ended. I've sort of begun to change my views a little bit on this, because certainly President Obama thought that, and he got the new START agreement, which I think is a major accomplishment in terms of strategic weapons. I'm a little bit more concerned about Putin. I mean, I don't know if I don't agree with Romney's statement that it's our number one geopolitical foe. I think that goes for Iran, actually, right now, and the public has that view, and to a lesser extent with regard to China. But it'll be interesting to see how much, Russia's obviously been troublesome with regard to Syria, for example, here. And it's under Putin, we might see some revival, sort of a revanchist kind of foreign policy.
Do you also put Iran at the top of your list, Lindsey Cohn, as far as the biggest challenges facing this president and the president who is in office in 2013?
Yes, I'd call it a challenge, too. I wouldn't want to call them our greatest geopolitical foe. but I agree with you. I don't understand why Russia topped Mitt Romney's list. That just doesn't make any sense at all to me. And it also doesn't make any sense. One of the things that you have to be aware of when dealing with Russia is that they like to be taken seriously. You know, you don't want to sort of dismiss Russia as being irrelevant now. But you certainly don't want to sort of revive any potential major rivalry. I mean, that simply plays right into Putin's hands. As far as the Israel thing goes, you know, the caller mentioned the danger of an Israeli strike on Iran and that he was worried that Romney would support anything like that. It's very clear that Obama has been putting his thumb down as far as he possibly can on the Israelis not to make a strike. I mean, that is very obvious. And I think your caller is probably correct that Romney would take that pressure off. Now, how much difference it makes, I don't know. I mean, it's possible that the Israelis might strike even against American objections. But I think it certainly gives them a little bit of pause as long as the U.S. is saying, we really don't want you to do this. And I think a Romney administration would take all of that pressure off.
I think it's significant that the National Security Advisor apparently was in Israel last week, Tom Donilon, to explain to the Israelis, you know, that apparently that the United States would use force against Iran if necessary. But my own view is I think everything has been put on hold by whomever is in the future administration until after November. My suspicion is that the Israelis have agreed to that formally or informally to not take any further action. And, you know, I guess it was just yesterday that the president enacted more sanctions on certain banks to tighten the screws even more with regard to Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is all probably part of this plan to make certain that nothing is done until after the election.
Jim McCormick is with us from Iowa State University. Also, Lindsay Cohn from the University of Northern Iowa. And as we wind up this program, I wanted to make sure that we got to talking about Hillary Clinton. Of course, we can't talk about foreign policy in the last few years without talking about her. After that contentious 2008 Democratic race for the presidential nomination, picking former rival Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State was viewed as a daring move back at that time. How would you characterize Lindsay Cohn, how she's performed in the past 3.5 years?
I think she's done a very good job, and she's been perceived by the public as doing a very good job. She has an extremely difficult job, but it's almost she may have been the only person with the kind of star power that he could have picked to sort of balance out the budget of the Department of Defense, of course, state chronically underfunded. And she has really been able to sort of drive his foreign policy team for better or for worse, you know, however you feel about that. I believe the last thing I saw was her approval ratings are over 60%, which is just amazing. You don't have anybody getting those kinds of approval ratings, especially not somebody who was as divisive as she was during the campaign. You know, people really hated her.
Mm-hmm. Do you see her staying on in President Obama's second term? Should there be one?
Well, I think he'd really like her to stay on in some capacity. She's been very effective for him, both in terms of substance and in terms of style. I don't know that she will. That's not something that I'd be able to speculate about.
Jim McCormick, how much of President Obama's good polling numbers on foreign policy can be attributed to Hillary Clinton's work?
Well, I think she should get sort of bulk of the credit, really, in some ways. I mean, what overshadows this is what you talked about earlier and the kind of passage that you played about the killing of Osama bin Laden. I mean, that creates this kind of halo effect over the administration. I mean, they can talk about, you know, their efforts on nuclear proliferation and so on, and they had some successes on that. But I think the killing of Osama bin Laden, provides this kind of halo protection here. But other than that, I think that Secretary Clinton has really been tireless in her job, and I think she'll go down as one of the, you know, better recognized secretaries of state in our history here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to my mind, she laid out most clearly what the Obama administration wanted to accomplish in its foreign policy and has really tried to put that into effect about this kind of multi-partner world. And she talked about trying to combine soft and hard power into smart power, and I think that she sort of epitomizes that. So she gets some of the credit, although I think these kind of international events also really play into the kind of view that the public had of the president. I mean, he's consistently been more successful and gained more approval on foreign policy than on domestic policy. Maybe that's not hard given the kind of recession that we've had, but it is kind of a real clear mark that foreign policy has been in some ways a strong point for the Obama administration.
Lindsay weighed in on this earlier. Jim, can you tell us what you can say about the likely Secretary of State pick or the type of foreign policy team that Mitt Romney would have around him? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. I mean, I was looking at some of his advisors, and there's nobody that really comes out of that group immediately. I mean, there's a number of people that have had State Department experience and so on. I think he would probably pick somebody outside of his advisory team that has also had. I mean, a favorite that I would have probably would be somebody like Richard Haass, who's the president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He has been in the last two Bush administrations. I mean, he resigned from the George W. Bush administration, and he wrote a book about how he was opposed to the Iraq War, but he was on the National Security Council for the first Bush, and he has a long, you know, involvement. I think he would be one of the names that Malika would pop up. Zelich would be another, Robert Zelich, who has been former Deputy Secretary of State and also President of the World Bank and worked in various Republican administrations. For my mind, those would be the top two choices, and both of those would be not the kind of foreign policy of sort of this primacy that some of the rhetoric, but probably more mainstream conservative foreign policy.
Lindsay Cohn, did you have any names to throw out in your thoughts?
Well, no, I would defer to Jim on that kind of thing. This is really not my area. But, you know, he does have I hope Jim is right. That's what I would say. I really hope he's right and that Romney would pick somebody who's slightly more moderate, slightly more sort of traditionally what we affectionately call paleo conservatives, who tend to be a little bit more cautious with the use of force.
I wonder if the feeling, public opinion on foreign policy, is a feeling that we should be in this time that the pendulum is swinging back, we should be pulling away from the world a bit, isolationist, especially with the economic crisis, such a long time enduring crisis here, especially after the experiences in Iraq and ongoing in Afghanistan. Are we in sort of an isolationist mode, would you say?
I wouldn't say we're in isolationist mode. I mean, the Chicago Council on Global Affairs does great polling on this. They got another new poll coming out here in early September for this year. But the last one they did is the public really is tiring, particularly of too much involvement. I mean, in some ways, there's greater sync between the Obama kind of approach of this kind of partner world with where the public is at right now.
Yes.
Rather than trying to be involved in all of these different disputes. There is a sentiment to pull back, not to abandon the world by any means. So that's why I would reject the use of isolationism, because the public continues to believe that we ought to play a major role in the world, but it's the shape of that role should be refined a bit. It'll be interesting to see what the latest. I suspect that kind of mood, if you will, that kind of public mood will continue to be present, particularly because the economic problems have not eased very much.
How would you characterize public opinions in terms of foreign policy recently, Lindsay Cohn, the direction it's moving?
Well, Jim is right, of course, but the important thing to think about here is that the isolationist strand in this country is among the Republicans right now. It's the Tea Party, you know, the sort of Ron Paul, or sort of, if you want to call it the Founding Fathers position, that we should just sort of let the rest of the world do its thing, get involved when we absolutely have to. That is a major strain among Republicans, but there is another major strain among Republicans, which is the much more active, we should preventative, we should take care of things, sort of the best defense is a good offense ideology. And that is where Mitt Romney seems to be, to me. That's where his rhetoric has been. That's where his advisory team is. I think Jim is absolutely right that the Obama approach of sort of using carrots and sticks, being sort of taking second place where we can because it is cheaper, is way more in line with what most Americans are interested in right now.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left, a little less than 2 minutes. I'd like to have each of you perhaps speculate on the parts of the world you're watching that aren't raising red flags yet but may influence election. What may happen that you think hasn't been paid attention to, Jim?
Well, one of the areas we really haven't even mentioned is sort of Asia here. You know, the United States has, under the Obama administration, has so-called pivoted towards Asia. And so, you know, what kind of developments occur, particularly in the South China Sea? You know, will the issue of, you know, now the aircraft carrier by the Chinese become an issue? Will they stay rather quiet and during this election campaign? So I would look for something in Asia here.
Okay. Lindsay, the final minute to you. What should we be paying attention to that we haven't mentioned that we aren't giving enough attention, perhaps?
Well, there are hotspots all over the world. I think Jim is right that China is, of course, something to keep an eye on in terms of their relationships with their neighbors, in terms of their influence on the Afghanistan-Pakistan region. Pakistan, of course, I think Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, that triad there is one to keep an eye on. But it's not like we're actually ignoring these things. I think, you know, we're largely correct in keeping an eye on China, India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Israel, Iran, North Korea to a certain extent. The one thing that I would really want to get across, though, is that, you know, you mentioned much earlier that most people don't care much about foreign policy in elections. They really should. Jim and
yes.
I can agree on this, because that is the one area where the president really has a significant amount of power. That's the one place. The president can't change the economy. He can't do anything about the economy. But he can do something about foreign policy. And we really do have a couple of people who are somewhat distinct in their approaches here. So it actually matters.
Lindsay Cohn, thank you for being with us. University of Northern Iowa Assistant Professor of Political Science. Jim McCormick, Iowa State University Political Science Professor. Lindsay and Jim, it's been a great pleasure having you on this hour with your views. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Jeff Schmidt, who is the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. Tomorrow on this program, we plan to have Governor Branstad live. Please chip in your questions, your comments. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.